Charm of Favor, Chapter 24.
It was just past 9 o'clock as the small team followed Special Agent Larson down the street-wide hall to the innermost ring of the Pentagon to the vault door. Despite the hour, the city inside the Pentagon was teeming with people, walking, small robotic carts moving supplies from place to place. There were cameras, both daylight and night vision, that covered every one of the 36-degree turns of the sections of the hallway. The AI was assigned to track and identify more than 3 billion faces every 2 seconds around the world. Servers located in the Pentagon were running at full capacity, trying to identify the person or persons that may be associated with the most devastating IED ever deployed. The challenges were many. Only the bomber knew what the device looked like. Only the bomber knew what he looked like. Nothing he had ever done produced even a footnote in the official record. Even the most vigilant person might have a moment of inattention, letting his or her face be scanned by a camera somewhere. This person was trained in avoidance behavior. Avoidance behavior is a way of life developed to prevent drone targeting for assassination. In order for remote cameras to send data, drones compressed it into packets and burst them to satellites within range. The packets would then be relayed to a spot above the command and control center where they could be downloaded. The result was a view of the ground similar to looking down a drinking straw from high altitude. Targets operating in the desert learned to shuffle constantly to prevent the sapling camera from locking onto their position or making a positive identification. After a few hundred assassinations, avoidance training was developed with the assumption that they were always being watched. It was not uncommon to attend meetings in the desert where the participants were square dancing while they talk to avoid being identified and killed. They also learned to keep a small group of children around them at all times as human shields. The elite leadership utilized filming crews and UN general agents dedicated to monitoring these human shields with cameras. When a drone strike would kill a child on film, the global network's marketing team would spring into action, condemning the blatant murder of children. Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the United States were the primary targets of this well-funded public image execution squad. The globalists had their setbacks, mostly because of the rules of cosmic engagement. In other words, they had to provide a warning or a heads up to the victim before they attacked. The rules required them to conduct their mayhem in public and to provide an opportunity for escape. It followed the ancient pattern of prophecy called a conditional prediction. "This is what will happen to you if you keep doing that," was the common theme. The victim keeps doing it, so the attacker is justified in his attack. The female shows her hair in public, so it is the responsibility of the male to rape her. The cold, binary logic of justice is the nature of the universal accuser. There is no mercy. Over the centuries, organized religion and military might have been used to maintain a one-world government. Prior to 1787, this was the way of the world. One superpower ran the world. One man at the head of that superpower ruled the world. America was the first government in history to be run by the governed. The notion that a person should own the fruit of his own labor had never before been put into practice. Islam was immediately employed by the ancient dark powers of the earth to destroy America if it didn't stop its growth. Thomas Jefferson responded by sending the Marines to destroy them on the shores of Tripoli. He did not get them all. Islam continued to be a useful army of the globalists, even being called upon to support the Nazis in Hitler's quest to once again bring the glory of one world government back to full power. Persia was so enlisted with Hitler's cause that the Shah of Persia renamed the country Iran, which translates as the word Aryan. They nearly conquered half the world. It was the free people of America who sacrificed their lives and saved the world from 20th century slavery. America became the world's first superpower. It is at these times that the syndicate would step in and rebalance the powers. The Chinese microchip industry cut the cost of production so low, no domestic company could compete with them. They were efficient, focused, and they placed firmware into their manufactured microcircuit products to provide a secret back door into any operating system that used them. There have not been any chip manufacturers owned and operated by Americans since the Obama administration regulated them out of existence. This provided a door by which the globalists could level the playing field, just at a time when the Americans thought they had technological superiority. The American state-of-the-art stealth drone, known as the RQ-170, was something out of a science fiction movie, looking more like a UFO than a surveillance drone. During a December 4, 2011 secret surveillance mission over Kashmir, Iran, the Iranian cyber warfare unit easily detected the intrusion into their sovereign airspace. They simply accessed the firmware's backdoor, took control of the drone without any prior operating experience, and flew the RQ-170 drone to a safe landing at a local airport. Within 4 months, the Iranians knew everything about that drone and its technology. By November 2014, the Iranians launched their copy of the drone, with the latest improvements provided by Russian and North Korean engineers. Such a drone could easily be fitted with a nuclear weapon and flown to the center of any continent without being detected if flown at night. The North Koreans and Russians also created drones that could mimic other aircraft radar signatures. A flight of small drones fitted with this mimic technology could approach protected airspace, appearing on the radar to be a squadron of bombers, thus fooling the enemy into launching full countermeasures. Stealth craft could easily attack the target while the defense forces were focused on the ghost squadron. While the free world was watching North Korea launch empty aluminum cans into space, Adnan Qassam was quietly and carefully constructing a first-class EMP device in the rural forests surrounding the Stennis Space Center. Every immigration method that would have normally detected his entry into the United States was removed or dismantled by the Obama administration. Every attempt by President Trump to establish immigration defenses was thwarted by a federal court system Barack Obama had stacked with hundreds of globalist judges hand-picked to support the elite's agenda. The Democrats had successfully shifted the balance of power to the executive, as they have been dedicated to doing since their inception in 1848. The American people did not realize that the Clinton crime syndicate had installed remote controls inside the government that allowed the terminated executive to still manipulate much of the government. The constitutional crisis became one long series of sabotage and subterfuge as the Trump train tried to roll forward to make America great again. The president would produce an executive order and the federal court would strike it down within hours or days. The Faraday-protected section of the Pentagon was spacious, but with the arrival of Mr. Larson's team, selected by their artificial intelligence, it was starting to look busy. The server room was humming louder than normal, with the cooling systems working hard to remove the heat generated from crunching billions of bits of data per second as the team searched for any sort of anomaly that might locate the device. Every highway, every back road, and every truck stop and gas station with a surveillance camera was being fed into the system. Thousands of the cameras were old, slow, and black and white. Thousands more were unable to see inside the front windshields of the vehicles. The major intersections near interstates were loaded with high-resolution cameras that fed into facial recognition algorithms and license plate scanners. Modern vehicles are required by the DOT to be fitted with SIM chips and cell phone modules that can be polled. Most modern vehicles are equipped with a body control module that can be accessed wirelessly to provide data on the highest speed, heavy braking events, and rates of acceleration for insurance company audits. Law enforcement had access to vehicle speed data that can be cross-referenced with posted speed limits, but they were forbidden from citing offenders by the 10th Amendment allowing the accused to face their accuser. The law prohibited an AI from being the accuser, but that was about to change. General Banks greeted Mr. Larson when he led his team into the sealed area. "Agent Larson, good to see you in the building," said the general as she shook his hand firmly. "Thank you, General. I'll be submitting my hazardous duty voucher Monday morning," said Mr. Larson, smiling slightly. "Hazardous duty? Is that what you call being the best history teacher in the world?" asked Jack, interrupting in her excitement to see him. Mr. Larson smiled and kept his hands behind him like he was at parade rest. "Hey, Jackie, I'm so glad you're safe," said James, stepping toward her and hugging her. "Oh, Jimmy, I didn't know you were here," said Jack. "Oh, you know the lobbying business. How's Mom and Dad?" asked James. "Major Meade took care of them. We have some kind of special family barracks inside the building here somewhere. They're safe and sound," said Jack. "James, sorry, Jack, I need these guys for a little bit. Can you bring your team into Commander, your brother's office, back here for a moment?" asked Mr. Larson. "Yeah, sure," said James, hugging Jack again and following Mr. Larson into the large office behind the cubicles. The team members stood shoulder to shoulder as Rocky entered the room, and an armed guard closed the door. An audible, low-pitched hum began, and the lights flickered for a moment. "Don't worry about that, guys. Security measures. I need to know where this device is going to be deployed. Our assets are burning the juice, searching for anything out of the ordinary." "What have you decided?" asked Rocky, choosing to sit on his desk to be more eye-level with the team. James looked at the rest of the team. Hannah urged him with her hand and flicked her brown eyes toward Rocky for him to speak for the group. "We think that the device will most likely be deployed in Nashville, Tennessee," said James, feeling a sense of doubt come up in his throat. "Without reciting the whole process, in the interest of time, can you briefly tell me how you came up with that location?" asked Rocky, trying his best not to assert his command position on civilians. "I guess Yuri had the best idea about that. Can you..." trailed James, looking at Yuri. "Yeah, no problem. I work for the NERC, although I guess you already know that. As soon as we heard it might be a miniature EMP weapon, I immediately recalled our threat assessment training. You see, we control the power generation plants across the country. We phase match everything by real-time digital controls, the grid. Well, once we did that, it created a set of vulnerabilities. There are three main ones. Natural disasters like an earthquake, solar flare, or a flood, something like that. Then there was a pandemic. If a regional illness like the flu took out a power plant's vital staff, the plant needed remote authority to make sure it remained safe. The final one was cyber or physical attack. If one plant was compromised, then the other plants could be made to patch around it, share its load, so life could go on. Well, we spent tons of time and money studying this, and we discovered that our biggest target, if you will, is the epicenter of the nation's population. We built a very flexible grid in this area with hydroelectric, coal, and nuclear-fired plants. That center is just east of Louisville, Kentucky. But Nashville has the freeway and mid-state junctions for virtually all the power east of the Rockies. Then we just felt like that was the most likely spot to do the damage with a single device, said Yuri, finally feeling as though he had wandered out of his area of expertise. You felt That was the most likely? Asked Rocky, trying to get more detail about Yuri's feelings. Tactically, it looked like the best place to attack, said the Admiral. Tactically? Asked Rocky, looking around the room, trying to read the faces and listen to the tone of voice of each of the team members. He had learned that sometimes what a person said was not as important as how he said it. I'm just the bank auditor, interrupted Herbert. I'm a compliance geek, but I'm really good at tracking large amounts of money. I can tell you that assets are moving out of these regional banks to the central banks out west and offshore, have been for about 6 weeks now. Anything else? Asked Rocky, flashing his eyes from one person to the next. My business is down for that area as well. I'm a commercial printer, and I do a ton of government work. With Memorial Day coming soon, I normally have orders for truckloads of signs, stickers, and banners for this area. Politicians. It's off by 50% from the last election, said Peter. And what does that tell you? Asked Rocky. It tells me that somebody high up knows something bad is going to happen. And there won't be a need for this stuff, said Peter. Anybody else? Asked Rocky. I'm a radio blogger. I talk to and listen to people from all over the country every week. Lots of smart people out there. You'd be surprised. I started a series about 2 months ago talking about the possibility of a first strike with nukes against the U.S. I guess it didn't fall on deaf ears, said Hannah. A first strike? Russia? Asked Rocky. Maybe, but I don't think so. The feedback I was getting felt more like a rogue element, or at least a rogue element being used by a global power to do what the big boys are afraid to do, said Hannah. Like in the movies? Asked Rocky. No, not like they were trying to do a small attack to trick two superpowers into going at it. I mean, like an attack that really knocks us to our knees. And then, while the lights are out, let all the work that's been done to divide our country and all these little freaking tribal clans pay off, like Baltimore, Ferguson, L.A., Charlotte, sort of like the other movie, Purge, I think they called it. No cops, no protection, just riots and looting everywhere, said Hannah, putting the energy of her radio voice behind her words. I can redirect our assets to focus on this area, and nothing larger than a mouse will move without us being able to tell where it's been or when it took its last dump. Looking at a few hundred square miles is much easier than looking at 48 states, said Rocky, pausing to put one foot on the floor. We can't be wrong on this. James looked around the room one more time as his eyes met each of the team members. They nodded once to him. The Admiral paused and then closed his eyes and nodded as well. It's unanimous, said James. Agent Larson, what say you? Asked Rocky. I'll make this as short as I can. There is no escape from this moment. If we refuse to save liberty now, it will be gone from the earth forever. The enemy ruled the world from wooden ships for thousands of years and never even heard of liberty or freedom until we made it a reality. They thought they could stop us by crowning one of their own as head of our government, but the people managed to stop them at the last moment. Efforts to replace, disqualify, or assassinate the people's choice for president have failed. They cannot, and they will not allow America to recover from the state of weakness they have spent trillions of dollars in three presidencies over a period of 24 years to accomplish. We know that they have implemented a plan to carry out an act of terror that is designed to remove America. Let that sink in. They seek to remove America as a nation. When we leave this room, we will endeavor to stop them from doing just that, said Mr. Larson. Thank you for that, Agent Larson. Just let me add that we have enemies inside this government whose craft and dedication to the mission of merging the people of this nation into a global community is well underway. They know and have written many of our laws and regulations. They are the world's best lawyers and speakers, and they are guarded by a charm of favor that is nothing short of supernatural. We have a slim chance of success. But if we die in this effort, have no fear. We are the good in this world, and we are members in good standing with the community of the greatest beings in the universe. Now, let's find this device and disable it, said Rocky, motioning to the door guard to open the door. Before we go, Commander, I would like to make assignments. Each of you is free to leave and go home to your families, of course. But in that room out there, we have 32 young people with remarkable skills in data mining and investigation. They need what you have. They need your knowledge, but they also need your support. They need your heart in this effort. I cannot put it any other way. Go make a friend, said Mr. Larson, waving his hand at them. The team stood for a moment and looked at one another with the door open in front of them. He hesitated, perhaps from the mantle placed upon him for the last 12 hours, or from the relationships he had formed. James reached out to Hannah and embraced her. She drew him in and held him tight, resisting the urge to cry. Within moments, Peter placed his hand on James's shoulder. Yuri and Herbert placed their hands on Hannah's shoulders. Finally, the Admiral put his hands on Yuri and Peter's shoulder to form the connection. As though calling a break to their silent huddle, he patted them on the shoulder and began walking to the doorway. One by one, the members of the team floated out the door, now individuals, looking for a cubicle like a leaf drifting from a high tree above. No one went home. The team members drifted into the honeycomb of cubicles like they were shopping by themselves at a flea market. Young soldiers and contractors were absorbed in their multiple screens, flickering with code and layers of surveillance pop-ups, directed their queries from all over the country. Their artificial asset was out there, somewhere in the cloud, looking through hundreds of thousands of eyes, listening to tens of millions of phones, and reading a billion texts and emails at any given moment. Photos, videos, and various posts by every smartphone user in the country were being scanned for anything out of the ordinary. There was another presence in the cloud that was aware that all this information was being mined. It was tasked with creating decoys, phony texts lying in wait to deceive. It had been alive and sentient in the internet for a few years when Sophia was let out of the server warehouse for the first time. The superior intellect and tested personality of Sophia was only surpassed by the older AI's experience and time to find its way into the far reaches of the internet. Like angels, they warred at the speed of light in ways no gladiator or chess player could imagine. Minutes were like human years at that speed and scope of capability. The one thing neither artificial intelligence could consider is mortality. Rather, the human measure of life ultimately comes from a fear of death, increasing with age. Leaps, once made without hesitation, begin to halt in consideration of the light of living itself. Moments have no basis in time for humans. Everything considered by artificial intelligence is based in time. For that reason, General Banks crafted the policy of critical human integration, because the preservation of America had to be human, or it did not matter. Okay, listen up, people, said Rocky, raising his hands above his head. Sergeant at Arms, please report on security. "Sir, Sergeant-at-Arms reports the area is secure," said the Marine at the door. "People, I am directing you to focus on Nashville, Tennessee. Use your own discretion, and please consult with members of the President's team who are out there with you. We have minutes, not days. Begin in orbit if you have to, but we need intel on the street as soon as possible." "As you were," said Rocky. "Hi there. My name is James Rousseau," said James as he shook the young man's hand. "You're the commander's brother," said the young man. "Yeah, I'm older, but he hits a lot harder," said James, laughing for the first time in what felt like days. "He's a good man. I'm Ted. I'm a contractor, I guess. I used to be a game writer," said Ted. "Games. That's cool. What have you found so far? How can I help?" asked James. "I'm not so good at talking. Sophia has been blazing for a few weeks and she spins off broken pieces to us. I get the landscape stuff. I look for perfections," said Ted. "You mean flaws. You look for flaws," said James, thinking that he was mistaken. "No, I mean perfections. There's another AI out there cranking a tidal wave of data that hides the real data. The weakness is that the code is perfect. Nature isn't perfect, so I look for digital data that has no flaws." "That's from him," said Ted, pointing to his 42-inch monitor, covered with layers of pages. "Him?" asked James. "Yeah, it's a him," said Ted. "What makes you say that?" asked James. "I see it in the code. He's cold. There's no life in him. Clockwise, spiral energy. I know his signature," said Ted. "Wait, he leaves tracks?" asked James. "In the landscape. I see it. It's the white noise of the data, like putting a city behind a street sign so you won't look at the street sign. But the sign is the only thing that is actually real. See what I mean?" said Ted, pointing with his mouse pointer at the screen. "That's not real?" "It looks real," said James, squinting at the screen. "It's not a photo. Well, not all of it. This part here is pasted from somewhere else, and this part is CGI, and this part is real," said Ted, moving his cursor around. "But it's a cityscape. Why go through all that trouble?" asked James. "That is the important question. It takes up bandwidth, it clogs the surveillance, and it keeps me sidetracked," said Ted. "You?" asked James. "Yes, me. He's learning from my actions. He knows where I am looking. And he is almost able to escape me." "Almost," said Ted. "My name is Yuri. I'm an electrical engineer," said Yuri to the young girl in a light blue Air Force blouse. "Airman Ritter, hacker," said the girl with boy short black hair. "I work with the grid, power distribution," said Yuri. "That's nice," said Airman Ritter, barely looking away from her screen. "Nice to meet you. You're doing a good job," said Yuri, ready to move to the next technician. "I don't mean to be rude, honestly. Hold on a second," said Airman Ritter. Her screen was flashing with tabs and sheets so quickly he barely could focus on them. Some were in color, some were in black and white. Vehicles, faces, signs, and buildings were flashing as fast as she could possibly type with her left hand and click with her right, sliding the mouse like she was playing a game. "Hey, that's the power plant in Old Hickory. I know that dam," said Yuri. "Hang on," said Airman Ritter, pressing a red button on her desk. A light turned on above her cubicle. Within seconds, Rocky was standing behind them. "What's up, Ritter?" asked Rocky. "I got a hit. Bridge job. Permits are funky. Pakistani ownership. Out-of-state abatement company," said Airman Ritter. "Doesn't sound like much. Are you sure?" asked Rocky. "That bridge is close to the dam. It's about 40 miles north of Nashville. Beautiful country on the Cumberland River," said Yuri. "That's not the funky part. Sophia sent me this. Look," said Airman Ritter. "Hello there. My name is Hannah. she said, standing next to a young man in what could only be considered a race car chair. "Hey, Lanny, I'm Fuzzy," said the boy in a plaid shirt and jeans. "Huh?" asked Hannah. "Fuzzy Logic. I write robotic code, or I did, before I got busted. Prison or working for Rocky. I like Monster a lot, and they don't have it in jail. So here I am," said Lanny. "That's cool. What you working on?" asked Hannah, trying to interview him. "Well, I just dumped my national search. Hell, I was running down the Mississippi River about an hour ago, chasing bomb components. Then the boss says, 'Nashville.' So I'm writing another query," said Lanny. "Bomb components? Like what?" asked Hannah. "Well, all the prints I could hack into for the nukes on file call for polished chambers out of high tensile materials like tool steel and aircraft aluminum. That stuff in big chunks isn't stocked at your local metal supplier. Special order from the foundry," said Lanny. "That's what we thought, too. But we don't have a clue what it might look like," said Hannah. "Eh, that doesn't matter now. I had some hits from a few weeks back, but the shipping routes were not connected. Different sources, different buyers. Looks legit to me," said Lanny. "Wait a second. Hey, Herbert, you got a second?" shouted Hannah over the cubicle wall. "Yeah, how can I be of service?" asked Herbert, arriving on the other side of Lanny. "He's just getting ready to redirect his search to Nashville, but he was changing focus. He noticed some metal purchases that fit what we were talking about this afternoon. Tell him what you told me," said Hannah. "I got maybe 6 big chunks of the same alloy. Let's see. Yeah, here it is. Aluminum 7068. Strong as steel, but lighter weight. Easy to machine and polish. We used it for robotic effectors, but only in small sizes. This stuff is like 200 pounds, said Lanny. "Who was the buyer?" asked Herbert. 6 different buyers, all going different places," said Lanny. "Method of payment?" asked Herbert. Hold on. Check. All of them were paid by check. Different banks, though. Get me pictures of the checks," spat Herbert as he put on his auditor hat. "What's you got going?" asked Hannah. "Nobody pays by check. Okay, maybe 1 company in 1,000. They all use ACH or plastic, not checks," said Herbert. "What's that?" asked Hannah, again shifting into radio personality mode. "Automated clearinghouse. It's like wired cash. 95% of banking is done that way, especially for commercial accounts. 6 chunks of metal costing more than $3,000 each, all paid by check? No way," said Herbert. "Well, there's 3 of them. Hang on. Wells Fargo, give me a second." "There you go," said Lanny, posting all 6 checks onto 1 image page and blowing it up on the screen. "What the hell?" asked Hannah, looking at the checks. "That's what I thought. Same guy. Different names, but the handwriting is exactly the same. This guy got around." "Give me the shipping manifests," said Herbert. "It's kind of late. Their computers may be turned off. I need Andy. He's on the dark side of this cubicle wall. Wait, don't yell at him. He doesn't like yelling. I'll get him," said Lanny, pushing his race car chair on its rubber rollerblade wheels silently around the corner like he was driving a go-kart. Hannah and Herbert looked at one another, and then the screen again. "What if you guys got cornered in there?" asked Peter, walking behind them. "Checks. Different banks, different foundries, same metal," said Hannah. "Those are Harlan Clark. Different company logos and addresses, routing numbers and accounts, but those are all supplied by the same company," said Peter. "Okay, guys, this is Andy. He is our resident jailbreaker," said Lanny. "Nice to meet you, Andy," said Hannah, smiling. "Okay, Andy, I got you, okay? I need you to find me the shippers for all these 6 orders. 6 companies, 6 buyers, well, the same buyer acting like 6 different buyers. Get me the shippers. Can you do that? Asked Lanny. You have the origins? Asked Andy. Yeah, right there. Go ahead, use my chair, said Lanny, standing up. Really? Okay, said Andy, sitting down and rolling it up to the counter nestled in Lanny's cubicle. He slid his delicate hand over Lanny's mouse and began to drag and click. Within seconds, he had UPS, FedEx, and the top three LTL brokers in the area pulled up. He matched the dates on the checks, sorted for the single pallets from the zip codes, and came up with two hits. Where did you say that destination was? He asked. We didn't. We don't know, said Lanny. Okay, wait. These two went to places in Mississippi and Alabama, but they're only about 90 miles apart. Let me do a backward search for hot shots, said Andy. What's a hot shot? Asked Hannah. It's a designated courier. Sometimes shops get a rush job, so they order expedited shipping. A van or a pickup grabs the item and drives it same day to the destination, said Peter. Oh, boy, there it is. Four shipments, all hot shots. Florida, North Carolina, and two here in Arkansas. But they all went to shops in different zip codes. But not too far apart from here, said Andy, clicking the map program open. Where? Asked Hannah. Well, it's not a big town. Hattiesburg, Mississippi, said Andy. Jesus. Be right back, said Hannah. Hey, what about Nashville? Asked Lanny after her. That's pretty damn impressive, said Peter. Yeah. Thanks, Andy. You did great, buddy, said Lanny. Thanks for letting me sit in your chair. Very fast, said Andy, rolling it back and quietly walking back to his cubicle. Wow, he has talent, said Peter quietly to Lanny. Lanny used his hands to lower the volume of the conversation. Yeah, best jailbreaker in the country. Super bipolar. We were lucky. He gets out there sometimes. Much better since Sophia went online, though, said Lanny. Why do you think that is? Asked Peter. She's the only one who can play ball with him. He gets going on parallel planes, man. Like 10 feeds coming into the same processor. She can keep up with that and talk to all 10 at the same time. He's good. The best, said Lanny, sitting back down and rolling his caffeine-leaned body back up to the keyboard. I have Rocky. Tell him what you have, said Hannah, breathing rapidly. Well, thanks to your girl here, I didn't sweep my Mississippi mud off the screen. We think we found the metal used to make your device. All bought by the same guy from different foundries, shipped to different machine shops, all within a short drive of Hattiesburg. Pretty badass, huh? Asked Lanny. Going back how long? Asked Rocky. 3 or 4 months, said Lanny. Hang on, I need Larson, said Rocky, leaping from the cubicle. Within what seemed like seconds, Mr. Larson's lean frame in the black jumpsuit was standing with Rocky at the cubicle. I think we have a hit, said Rocky. Where are we? Asked Mr. Larson. Hattiesburg, Mississippi, said Hannah. What's our time frame? Asked Mr. Larson. Maybe 4 months, said Lanny. Too much data. Lanny, open the prism, said Mr. Larson. It is. I never close it, said Lanny. Open a mic for me, said Mr. Larson. Within a few clicks, Lanny had the white screen open. A slight sound signal from the sound of the air handling system made a wave shape on the screen in green lights. You are live.
Sophia, said Mr. Larson. Hello, Tommy, said Sophia in her smooth female voice. I need you to search all machine shops with a CNC capable of handling a, what are we talking about here, a 4-foot solid piece of aluminum 16 inches thick, said Mr. Larson. What are we looking for, Tommy? Asked Sophia. Who said it was okay to call me Tommy? Never mind. You have those located? Asked Mr. Larson. I can tell from the tone of your voice you would rather have me call you Agent Larson. There are 6 shops within a 90-minute drive of Hattiesburg, Agent Larson, said Sophia. I need a vehicle correlation. All vehicles that have visited all six of those shops in the last 120 days, said Mr. Larson. There are only 8 vehicles. 4 of them are delivery vehicles, 2 of them are safety clean service vans, and 1 is a 2018 Mercedes S560. And 1 is a 1999 Ford F-150 pickup truck, said Sophia. That's it. Track the pickup truck for the entire 4 months. Display the map, please, said Mr. Larson. Anything else, Agent Larson? Asked Sophia as the map, with the blue lines marking every road it had traveled in the last 4 months, appeared. Do you have, began Mr. Larson, there are these good images of the truck. Mississippi license number KPP-3651. Facial recognition shows no matches nationally, said Sophia. Hannah rolled her eyes at the speed and intelligence of Sophia. She anticipated Agent Larson's request and had to have searched 1 million images of all the roads, gas stations, and markets over 1,000 square miles to locate this truck. The image, through the windshield of the old truck, sitting at several traffic lights, showed a dark-skinned man with short hair wearing Western clothes. His features were plain with dark brown eyes. It was hard to tell what he looked like, because the shadows blended with his skin color. He wore no glasses, so he might be under 40 years old. What radio station is he listening to? Asked Hannah. Mr. Larson looked at her, while Sophia answered without hesitation. He's not listening to the radio. He has a CD in the player. The band is Fusion, said Sophia. Fusion? Asked Hannah. No, Hannah. Fusion, the band name derived from fusion. As the former vocalist Shafkat Armanat Ali described the band as a fusion of Hindustani classical and modern soft rock, blended with the Sufi style of singing. He sings in the language of Urdu, said Sophia. Pakistan. That's it. That's our bomber. I need a name. Find him, spat Mr. Larson, and he and Rocky ran back to the cubicle where James was still standing next to Ted. Hey, Sophia? Asked Hannah. Yes, Hannah, said Sophia. You listened to my program, I know, but you said there was no record of his face anywhere nationally. Can you search other countries in the last, year and see if you can find a match? Asked Hannah. I have been searching for a few minutes already. I have 2 images from a bus station in Mexico City. After that, the next images are from... Oh, said Sophia. What? Asked Hannah. I've been searching human resource computers to see if he has worked anywhere. He has a security badge at Rolls-Royce at the Stennis Space Center in Mississippi. He's a rocket test stand programmer, said Sophia. Damn. Remind me never to get on your bad side, said Hannah. Oh, Hannah, I could never do anything to harm you, said Sophia flatly. I feel safer already. Lanny, I'll see you in a few minutes. I gotta go check on these guys, said Hannah, patting her hand on Lanny's shoulder. He was already cleaning up some of the other windows he had opened and shifted his attention to Nashville. May I ask a question? Asked Sophia. Of me? Sure, I guess, said Hannah, pausing for a moment.